I'm sure there was many days that I, myself, my husband said, oh, Jesus, are we definitely doing the right thing? You know, this is a hell of a lot of work. Are we going to get the return? But you just get such a buzz out of it that there was no going back.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Really feel like we're getting some momentum behind the pod in the last couple of weeks. Getting some superb messages from people, how it's helped them, how it's helped them drive business. So if you've enjoyed it, I'd love to hear from you. I really do appreciate every bit of feedback I get. You can join my newsletter, which goes out every single Monday by email. Go to mrgaryfox.com, put in your email. You'll get an email from me every single Monday morning with the best ideas, trends, and business breakdowns that I've seen during the week. We're also now on YouTube. Finally made the step. We're on YouTube. You can watch episodes up there. The Idea Lab goes up on YouTube every single Monday. Also, go to Mr. Gary Fox on YouTube and you'll find me there. Like and subscribe, as all the YouTubers say. Now, on to today's episode with Noreen Doyle, the founder of Irish Biltong. Noreen is an incredible brand builder and marketer, and I guarantee you, you've heard of this business already because she does such an incredible job of promoting the business. It's also the favorite snack of so many Irish sports stars. You'll have seen it on many, many Instagram posts with rugby players, soccer players, athletes. Everybody is consuming Irish Biltong at the minute. It's a beautiful product. It's marketed so well, and Noreen has an incredible story to tell of the heritage of the brand, where it came from, their family background in the meat industry, and how they came to run Irish Biltong. Here's my chat with Noreen Doyle, the founder of Irish Biltong. Noreen, welcome to the pod.
Great, thank you. Great to be here, Gary.
Now, obviously people can't see us because it's a podcast, but you've got lovely branding up behind you.
Yeah, well, I suppose I spend half my life on Zoom at the minute, you know, and normally I would be out there at any event or doing anything I can wearing a Biltong t-shirt or driving one of the Biltong vans. So I'm here in my house with Biltong logos behind me. It's as good as it gets at the minute.
It's amazing though how many people still don't do that. I'm on Zoom calls two or three a day, and I think you're the first person in over a year to have their company brand and stuff behind. So it's, you're innovating.
Well, it's, you know, I suppose it's all about keeping the brand awareness going out there. And I'm on, you know, I'm in a lot of networks and stuff, and networking is so important, especially at the minute as well, that you just wouldn't know who's going to be on the call or who's going to be looking, and it might trigger. Plus, I love if I get on, you know, I'm doing a Zoom with a group and one of them goes, oh, I know your product. Yeah. Like, I love that. But, you know, that's a real selfish me thing. But it's great to hear people recognize it, because I suppose I spent a number of years trying to educate people on what Biltong actually was, first of all. And then we were very much almost first in this country to really go at this market quite aggressively. So we did spend a lot of time educating people. So it's great that people have started to recognize the brand.
It's very distinctive. It's very well done. Even just looking behind you, it's very eye-catching. For anyone that's beamed down from Mars and isn't familiar with what you guys do, just give a quick explainer.
So basically, we are the producers of a dried beef snack called Irish Biltong. Biltong is traditionally a South African product. And we came across it a number of years ago at a food market. And because we're already in the beef industry, my husband and I have a wholesale meat business. We have a farm. I come from a dairy background. My husband comes from a beef background. So it's kind of in our nature to have something to do with meat. We needed to pivot a little bit and find some new growth in the existing business we had. So I looked into this product and discovered that actually, whilst there was nobody really producing it in this country, the high sports end nutritionists were importing it from the UK. Oh. For, you know, rugby players, golfers were using it. So we approached some of the nutritionists, and that's how we get into places, and said, look, if we produce this product from locally sourced Irish beef, will you start using it instead of importing it? And that's really how we kicked off. And we got one or two really nice customers. And then we started to get brand ambassadors through the rugby and through golf. And slowly but surely, we started to grow the brand.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because it's a very unusual product in Ireland. I think when you guys started, I struggle to think of many healthy snacks, never mind just in your space. Like, yeah. And it's not that long ago. So how did you, you've kind of alluded to it there, but you saw it at a market. And then what was your next step? Because I think this is the bit that always gets people. What was the first thing you did?
Okay, well, I suppose the first thing I did was look up and see what it is, and does anybody else that we would work with know what this is? And really, they didn't. Now, there is quite an influx of South African people in this country, which is a great benefit to us,
yeah,
because they are a completely separate customer to us. But we looked at it, and then we looked into the nutritional benefits of it, because it had to be healthy. And we discovered, Jesus, this is a really good protein product, high protein, clean, you know, really everything it says on the package. And did a little bit of market research, and that's when I came across the fact that this product was being used as a healthy snack by individuals, you know, in their healthy dieting. And I suppose it took us a good 12 months to perfect it, to make sure we got it to the best possible product. But it also at the same time, there was just that growing market for healthy food. Mm-hmm. People were just becoming aware. They were really starting to go down the protein route. And you would see aisles, and especially like we did the Food Academy with Super Value. And I was saying, there's no point in putting us in general grocery section. You have to put us into a healthy snacking section. And they were only starting to develop a healthy snacking section at that stage. Whereas now that's a whole aisle at the time. That was like, Jesus, you might have two or three shelves and that was it. So it was really, we were getting in there a little bit possibly before our time, but it was important for us to test the market. You know, the Food Academy allowed us to test the retail market, figure out where the placement needed to be. We very quickly realized our product needs to be at till points. It's a grab and go healthy snack. Mm. But you're competing with all the sugary products, but then that started to change over time as well. So so we four course, any place that people were running in to grab something quick to eat, and then the drive towards healthy eating. So we were just lucky. We got in at the right time with a really good clean product. Mm.
Did people understand what it was?
No. Not at all. So which was our biggest challenge, because I got hugely criticized. You know, like I did lots of different business courses and marketing courses and entrepreneurial courses, and to try and learn what was my best route. How the hell could I get this great product out to the people? And, you know, you hear it all the time, just because you think it's a great product doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work. Mm. But we just felt that it's such a simple thing. It has to work. And they were saying to us, why in the name of God are you keeping the word biltong? Nobody knows what it is. But it was very important to us that we kept the heritage of the idea of the product alive.
Yeah.
So it was marrying the South African heritage with the Irish beef and bringing it together to make this great product. Mm. And now that really stands to us, because biltong is actually, just because it wasn't known in Ireland, there was lots of producers of it in the UK. Lots of producers of it right across the world, actually. Even the Americans, you know, the jerky is a similar type of product.
Yes.
And it's a big bone of contention with me, but...
Oh, we'll get into this in a second.
It's a kickoff for a conversation, you know. Oh my God, that's jerky. Well, it's not jerky, actually, but it's similar, and here are the differences, and suddenly you have a conversation about it. Mm. But you know, as you can tell, I love talking. So all I had to do was go around, you know, go to an event with a packet, and they go, what is that? And I'd say, well, let me tell you, just taste it. And as I had said to you earlier, a lot of our customers are brought over the line once they taste the product. It's all about tasting. And that's a huge challenge for me at the minute, because, you know, we would do lots of promotional events throughout the year, and, you know, it's not an attractive thing to look at. You know, the packaging is great and everything. When you open up, it's dried beef. So it's not a sexy looking product, but it's great to taste. So it's all in the taste. So that is a challenge for us at the minute.
How are you getting around that?
Well, I've always utilized social media hugely. I'm very active on social media. I'm very engaging with people that I feel will benefit my timeline. And we are, I've gone back to the basics. I reconnected with a lot of our high profile ambassadors. So, you know, we have a number of the Irish rugby lads who, you know, get some free product. We'll do out a tweet or an Instagram. They'll do little videos, some of them. And they're, you know, they're very kind and they're very willing to do this. And that's how we're pushing it. And that's how we've always pushed it. But it's even more important now because these guys, you know, they're looked up to and they have lots of followers. But it has to be the right type of person. It has to be a genuine, you know, person that genuinely loves the product. And that does work for us. We are working with a number of subscription box companies as well at the minute. They seem to be something that's an area that's growing quite nicely. And again, it's getting the product to them, let them taste it for themselves, and then they endorse it out to their customers. But it's kind of word of mouth, but on a bigger scale.
Is it hard when you're an Irish brand trying to do that? Because you have a smaller pool of influencers, you have obviously a smaller market as well. Is it tough?
It's tough for lots of reasons. It's quite tough being a woman in this kind of industry, in the meat industry.
Interesting.
It's very male orientated. And, you know, at the beginning, that was one of my challenges, was to get, you know, you do have to, you know, you're dealing with local meat suppliers, you're dealing with a lot of local people who have been in this industry for a long time. And suddenly this one comes along and things, you know, this product that we've never heard of is great.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of challenges there, but I suppose I probably have the type of personality that I'm not forceful, but I like to try and win people around, you know, so that was one challenge for me at the beginning. I think for any small food business, they might tell you that Ireland is always going to be the hardest place to crack. Retail is exceptionally difficult in this country. I come from a pennies background from a buying point of view. So I was a little bit lucky in that I had an idea of what it was like from the other side. So we've worked with all the chain stores and it's hard work. It's very hard work.
It sounds traumatic from all the entrepreneurs I've spoken to in the food game. It makes me anxious. And just hearing it secondhand, it seems very tough.
Yeah, it's tough going because they treat the small suppliers the way they treat the big guys, and the big guys have the money for all the people behind all the branding and all the promotion and all the paperwork filling and taking every box. Now, what we did, we never went directly. We always went through a third party. So we took that layer of protection because you just can't, when you're a small producer, you can't afford to get, you know, kicked out after a few months when you've already, you know, penciled in that cycle of production. And I've heard so many awful stories and, you know, people not getting paid, et cetera, et cetera. So I've just put too much hard work into this. I'm never going to do something that's going to completely expose me. So that somebody who is pushing a pen at a desk is just going to destroy the work I've done. But so, yeah, you know, but it's taken me 3 years to realize that. I always thought, you know, really crack the Irish market, but geez, that's only a drop in the, you know, it's a drop in the well. You know, and I think people end up going down kind of rabbit holes thinking this is the way to go. But the best thing about being small is you can pivot so quickly that you can pull back and go, okay, no, actually we need to shift to this. And that's exactly what COVID did for us, actually.
We'll talk on that in a second, but you don't know what you don't know, I think, when you start. And you're the second person in about 3 weeks who've mentioned going through a third party. What does that actually mean for someone who's just starting off now in the food business? What does that actually mean for them?
Okay, so we go through distributors. So you pay them a certain amount per packet. It's as simple as that. But what they do is, so you supply to them, you get paid on your 30 days, and they get the product out there. And once it's in their warehouse, that's their problem after that. You know, if it sells, it sells. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But you got paid on your 30 days. And that's critical. Plus, you're not having to go and do. Now, I do, in fairness, I'm a little bit, what's the word? I like to check up on stores, even though I'm not personally putting the stock in there. But I get a list of all stores that we're in. And I like to go and check to make sure we're actually in there. That the because you're paying this company to do a job for you.
Yes.
you're representing your product. So, you know, that you have to make sure stock rotation is happening and that you're actually on the shelf as opposed to in a box at the back of the warehouse, which happens as well with the bigger companies. So we picked a few smaller distributors who take a little bit more care of your brand.
Yeah.
You know, and because they've probably come from a smaller industry themselves, they know how important it is. You know, you're kind of handing this baby over to them and saying, please make sure it doesn't get lost in the warehouse.
I was going to ask you that. I was like, how do you ensure that this third party who is never going to be as emotionally invested as you are, how do you ensure that they're actually getting your product out there?
Well, I suppose number one, you'll know by sales. So if sales aren't working, you've got to say, well, why? Where's the placement in the shop? Is it in store, not in the warehouse? Are you actually going to that? Are you actually checking on that stock every 3 to 4 weeks like you're supposed to be doing? Mm. You know, so they're fairly basic questions. And that's why I like to pop into stores and see, like I've gone into stores and the product has been hanging in completely in the wrong section. I went into a store actually, and it was hanging in the pet food section. You know, like, hello. You know, and you know, but they're... How was the person that probably took the stock in at the back door hadn't a clue what the product was and just put it where he thought it should be instead of getting direction from manager or from whoever is distributing to the shop. So there's a lot of follow up on it, but like you have to trust them. Number one, because it's going to be in their contract. And number two, sure, you always have to check.
Mm. Bring me back to when you started then in terms of the Biltong. How did you even begin to develop it? Because obviously you're from a meat background, you're both from farming backgrounds, so you probably had a distinct advantage over, say, someone who's just coming at it from a fresh start. But how did you even start to develop it? Like, to bring me back to those early days of figuring out how to do it.
Okay, well, what we did was actually we met a South African butcher who produces it in the back of his house.
Brilliant.
And he literally taught us how to do it. So we had to bring in these specialized airing cabinets from South Africa. So the whole idea is, in South Africa, they would take this slab of meat. So we take a strip loin and, a silver side. So it's a big slab of meat. And they would have hung it off of their verandas or off of some, because the weather conditions and the temperatures allow the meat to dry out, basically. So what you're doing with it, you're extracting the moisture out of the meat and it naturally dries out. So by the end of it, you've taken out 80% of the moisture and what you're left with is a relatively hard, solid stick of meat. So the idea with these airing cabinets was to mimic the weather conditions, the temperature conditions in South Africa. So all they are dehumidifiers, but they're big cabinets. Mm. So we brought a number of those in from South Africa. And we played around with it for a year. We tried every cut of beef because you have to be logical as well. Now, the difference between us and maybe other producers in other countries would be that we really do only use really top-grade beef. You could make biltong out of anything. We make it out of venison as well. You could make it out of chicken. You can make biltong out of anything. But what you put into it is what you get out of it. Yeah. So we use really good quality, locally sourced Irish beef. And like, in fairness, the Irish beef is known worldwide for its quality. Mm. And we're very lucky where we live. We're in the hub of some amazing farmers who produce some amazing beef. And again, that comes back to our background. Like, my husband is well known in the beef industry. So he literally knows the farmers that the beef is coming from, you know. So it just makes it a better trust story for our customers. Yeah. We literally know from start to finish where this product is coming from. So we spent a good 12 months trying out. God, we made biltong out of fillet steak. We made biltong out of everything, right? But obviously then you have to do your numbers and, you know, what's profitable, what isn't. And then we came down to the product we actually have at the minute.
They're the beautiful stories that the people love hearing, because like often people kind of go, oh, we had this idea and now we're in 1,000 stores. And they're like, whoa, go back. Tell me about cutting it up in the backyard, putting it into these cabinets. Because that's the magic, isn't it? That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of being an entrepreneur, is those little early days where you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to figure it out here.
Yeah. And, you know, it was so exciting and building the branding then as well. And, you know, mood boards and colors and everything, right? It was a completely, like, I had been in startups in my previous life, as I call it, before I got married. So I had a lot of, I had a certain amount of experience, and it's just such an exciting journey because you see this thing actually starting to take form in front of your eyes. And then, you know, somebody tastes the product and they're going, God, that's damn good. We really like that. And then you get a few stores to the Food Academy and you think, oh, I'm made up, you know, and it's just
the pride.
It's just great. But you have to have a lot of, I suppose, guts, and you also have to have a pretty thick skin because not everybody is going to get it. A lot of people are going to criticize. It's just the nature of the game, and especially in this type of game. So, you know, we were pretty adamant. We knew what we wanted and we knew where we wanted to go, but we were always open to listening to voices who had done little businesses before or even bigger businesses. You know, because like there was so much we needed to learn.
Talk to me a little bit about that, because I think that's the crux that gets a lot of people in terms of there's never a shortage of critics. You'll never open the door and find a shortage of critics. So how do you balance off that self-belief of this is a brilliant idea? This is definitely going to work. We are 100% passionate in this. How do you balance it off between the criticism, people going, ah, that'll never work, but also then taking in the good advice, going, oh, well, he knows what he's talking about because he's done X, Y, Z. How do you marry those three?
Well, I think the critical thing you need to do is market research. You need to be able to look, I could show you anything and say, I think this is great and this is going to sell. And I could be completely talking rubbish because I've not done an ounce of market research on it. I need to be, I spent ages going through the snacking, just basic snacking. You know, what is categorized in snacking? What's categorized in healthy? Why do people like protein? Why do people need it? And that whole, and there was so much information available at that time, you know, through places like Board Beer, through Enterprise Ireland. I did lots of different courses. And gathering the information either tells you you're talking rubbish or actually there might be something here, but you have to be able to prove it. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to sit in front of any type of a board to present, I have to be able to prove the statistics of the growing snack market, the awareness of healthy eating, the awareness of beef products, because there were a certain amount of beef products out there that were categorized as snacking. So you needed, whilst built on itself wasn't really a category at that time, but there was that drive pushing towards that type of healthy eating. So all of that gathered information and facts and figures allows you to then put down a plan of, well, actually, I have something in this. This is definitely doable. And then, but it has to be scalable. So there's no point if I can just supply into four stores. What happens if, and this happened to us, what happens if a chain store comes to you and say, I want somebody next week, can you manage to do that? Mm. And if you can't, then you're not at the right place to be putting the word out there.
Yeah.
So market research is critical.
How do you bridge the gap, though, between doing your market research and then essentially you created a new category here in Ireland? So how do you bridge that belief of going, I know there's a, you know, snacking is growing. I believe that. I now believe we're going to create an entire new niche here and just plow through. So how do you bridge that?
You take the jump. Hmm. You jump in. And we were forced to jump in, actually, because we were at a stage where we were kind of out of the trialing period and we knew that there was a market there. What we didn't know was how we were going to get there. What was the correct route? What area should we deal with? Should it be all online? Should we try retail? And I went to a food conference in City West. And there was one of these mini Dragon Den competitions on. And it was real kind of ad hoc. You know, I was asked if I'd do it the day before. And I said, right, you know, it'd be good for my pitching, good practice. And Joe Barrett from Apple Green happened to be on that panel. So went up, did my pitch. And there was a lot of things that we needed to tweak still, a lot with packaging, you know, little bits that we were still learning that we needed to do. And I won it on the stage, and all it meant was, you know, a cert, right? But actually, Joe Barrett offered me 110 Apple Green stores on that stage that day.
Wow.
So and I've been quoted for saying this, and excuse my language, but it was a case of shitting or getting off the pot. we were suddenly offered this opportunity that I'd been looking for months, you know, and my husband was with me. He was like, how in the name of God are we going to do this? And I said, I don't know, but we're going to do it because this is the opportunity. We're going to grab this. And the very same day, we ended up having a meeting with a distributor who also worked with Apple Green, and it just flowed. Mm. It was amazing. It was just meant to be, you know. But that was the kick we needed. We could have sat around and waited, and I could have trialed this and trialed that, and suddenly we're pushed, and I'm like, yep, you know, you just jump because you have to at some stage.
At what stage of the journey was that?
Oh, very early. So that was only probably about 12 months into it.
Okay.
So shortly after that, we launched into that. We were working out of a very small space. It was a challenge, but we got it done. So it was our first really big order. And, you know, we needed bigger space. We really needed to up our game. And we needed money. So I had the opportunity to go on Dragon's Den, which was a fantastic PR experience. And off the back of that show, we actually got private investment. And nothing to do with the show, but somebody else from outside who had seen the show approached us. And we opened up a brand new unit, which is now a top-ranking facility. We have the potential to do a ton of product a week. Mm. It's amazing. You know, we did it from the very scratch right up. And I made a video of, you know, the weeks and weeks of process till the last. It's fabulous to watch it. Nice. And it's top-notch. It's, you know, we're very proud of it.
So then you got the investment. This all seems to have, I know, a year in, seems like, to some people, they'd be like, oh, she was out a long time. To others who've done it, they're like, that's early.
It was fairly fast because I suppose you spend so long talking about it and doing research and doing this and doing that. And then suddenly the ball is really rolling, you know, and you just got to go with it. You know, you kind of believe in yourself. And like, I'm sure there was many days that my husband said, oh, Jesus, are we definitely doing the right thing? Mm. You know, this is a hell of a lot of work. Are we going to get the return? But you just get such a buzz out of it that, you know, there was no going back. Yeah, so we got the investment and we created a brand new unit. We were just lucky. We have one unit in the business park, and the one right beside it came up for rent. Again, it was just kind of meant to be. So, so we have an amazing facility now. And it's great.
What was the next step then after you got your facility up and running and then you were scaling out to Apple Green? What was kind of then, because that's a massive, like to go from there to here in almost overnight. How did you handle that growth?
Oh, well, I'm very lucky with the team we have around us. Mm. And I think, you know, from a small company point of view, you have to make sure that the people that are on your team are going the same direction as you, and that nobody is afraid to push forward or to, you know, to believe me that this is, you know, this is the vision, this is where we can go potentially, but we're going to have to work really hard. And we're just lucky that the team we have around us, we're all for that. You know, it's quite an injection of excitement, you know, to think, Jesus, there's this whole new journey ahead of us.
Yeah.
So it was a case of, so now we have this new facility and we can produce buckets of Biltong. Now we need to get the sales in, you know, now we're on the other scale. So having got Apple Green, we got a number of other retail chain stores. You know, we're in Super Values, we were in Tesco's, we did Aldi and Lidl for a little while. And all that retail thing was great, but it was really hard work. Mm-hmm. But all the time, we had originally set up an online business as well. And that started to take off. And that started to work really well for us. And it's such an easier job than doing retail.
Yeah.
So then we started dabbling a little bit with export. We did a few trials. We did a trial in Germany. We did a trial in the Czech Republic with partners out there that would have been in the same area as us. And they proved that actually, you know, Irish beef is really sought after outside of Ireland. Mm. Now, we never touched the UK because talks of Brexit had started. A lot of UK producers already producing. Ours is definitely better quality. So you're going into a place where they're used to cheaper product, cheaper price, it would have been a very hard sell.
I get you, yeah.
So we went to countries that really, really appreciated the quality of Irish beef. So suddenly export has started to open up to us. And it really, you know, it just kind of grew year on year after that, until COVID hit, of course.
Mm. I think that's very, you made a really interesting point there about, I want to ask you about two things, just about growing your team and then knowing your market. So you knew not to go into Brexit, you are not going to Britain. You knew that going where your product is appreciated was a key differentiator. I think that's that can't be understated, having that knowledge and having that, I think that's confidence as well, because the obvious route is the UK, because it's like, oh, same language, you know, oh, it's an easy one, you know, we'll just try that out. It's a remarkable vision to know that you don't need to do that. How did you build out that team? Because I think that's that initial one or two hires are so, so important, and also so, so hard, because you've gone from maybe a team of one or two where everything's up here in the brain to like then going, Ash, you know how to do it yourself. You know, how did you, because that's hard. You made it sound quite easy there. That's hard.
Yeah, it's awful, because you're exactly what you said. You're doing everything in your head yourself. You're wearing a different cap every half hour. You know, you're doing sales, you're doing accounts, you're doing packing, you're doing this, you're everything, right? You're cleaning toilets, you're doing everything yourself. And then suddenly you have to trust somebody to come on board with you. We're lucky with our other company. We have a number of butchers that we deal with. So from that point of view, that was easily managed. And then I took somebody on as kind of my sidekick. Okay. And I knew her already, and it was a totally different world for her. She'd never done anything like this before. But I suppose I'm really enthusiastic about this. And I think if you can get the right person, you can bring them along that journey with you if they're willing to learn. Mm-hmm. And if they're willing to, you know, be a little bit adventurous. So I got a few people like that, and suddenly the team is all going in the one direction, but it's all about making sure that they have the confidence, but communication as well, you know. Like I would talk to them about everything. I would discuss things with them, you know, taking their opinions in, like, they might be, you know, on the production floor doing something, and they might find a quicker way of doing it, yeah, or, you know, an easier way of doing it, or a more efficient way of doing it. We did a lean program with the local enterprise, and we had a consultant in for a while, and I'd say he wanted to strangle me, because it's all facts and figures and everything. And don't make me sit at a desk. Just don't make me sit at a desk and do paperwork. It drives me insane. But doing the lean program, a lot of it is analyzing and timing and recording. And it was just a nightmare for me, right? But what came out of it was phenomenal, because, you know, you cut a few minutes off this process. You change, you know, even the direction of the way people are moving when they're packing. Just incredible learnings. Like, it's just phenomenal. And suddenly you have a much easier flow of production, and people are working more efficiently and a little bit happier, you know. And all of those things have to be taken into account. Packing built on online is the most mind-numbing process in the world. It's, you know, for anyone who does this type of work, it's mind-numbing. So you have to take all of that into account, you know. So you just have to look after your staff. It's as simple as that.
How did you do that, Noreen? Because that's easily said and hard done, because, you know, especially when you're a small team, how did you, I guess, lead? So in terms of sheltering them from the bad stuff and the uncertainty, because you can't be like, geez, lads, I'm really worried now that order didn't come in, because I've been in that situation where you're kind of really worried about something and you're going in every morning going, morning, how is everyone today? You know, so how did you do that? Because there's definitely a skill. That's definitely something I learned rather than something I knew. So how did you do that?
Well, I suppose I am naturally a very positive person. Mm. So the world is never going to end if the order doesn't come in. We'd prefer if it didn't happen that way, right? But first of all, I'd never ask the staff to do anything that I wouldn't do myself. So I would regularly be packing. And there's always a bit of crack, actually. You know, there's always a bit of chatter and blah, 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 right? And it's very important that I keep my foot in that, because I need to make sure that the processes are going the way they should be, or I'm hearing stuff from the staff that I need to be hearing that I wouldn't if I was up in the office.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of me being involved as much as they're involved. And I think that gives them a little bit more trust as well, you know. I'm not just the person in the office giving orders.
Yeah, sitting behind a desk, behind the door.
Yeah, and I'm not that type of person anyway. As for, oh my God, if shit hits the fan, what do we do? Well, I would never look at things like that anyway. Anyone who knows me personally would say, no. Like, I'd say, okay, that order didn't come in, so now we need to go and find sales someplace just to fill that order. Because we will find them. We always find them. So I suppose if you give out positivity, people feed off of that and it just makes them feel a little bit more secure. I would never tell them, bump it up and say, oh my God, we're flying, things are marvelous. Because that's not realistic either. Yeah. You know, I'd say to them, things are going good, but we need to do X, Y, and Z. We need to keep this ball rolling, you know, and it's involvement in them, but it's keeping it positive.
What happened then? You've alluded to it a couple of times there. What happened when COVID did hit?
Well, I suppose after my immediate panic, like we supply into the airports, we supply into gyms, we had just started off a really nice area into pubs. You know, people like to have a pint but pretend that they're healthy snacking at the same time instead of crisps.
Yeah.
So that has started.
Balances itself off, right? Pint of Guinness and Biltong. I think the two of them work both. You know, a bit of protein, a bit of healthy, a bit of iron.
Absolutely. Pint of Guinness and a bit of beef, how much better can I get? And that has started to become really a really nice revenue feeder for us. And then obviously retail, you know, things were slowing. That whole area, we also supply into places like Google and LinkedIn and Facebook. Mm. That stopped. So lots of our areas literally stopped overnight. So what do you do? Well, online was still available. And then obviously everybody was talking about buying online.
Yeah.
So I got back on the horse and I started really pushing on social media. I contacted, you know, some of the corporates that we deal with. We did home care packages. We came up with different little hampers. We combined a couple of companies together. We offered that out on our website and suddenly that started to take off.
Okay.
We do out a mailer every month to all of our customers who are online, and that was invaluable to us because it reminded people we were here, and they suddenly, you know, and the support local, we really pushed that. You got to be supporting the small companies. You know, my thing was, look, the big lads are going to survive, okay?
Yeah.
Just if you can just keep small people going, it would be great. So we said, geez, like, this online thing is great. You know, it's not as much heartache. Your money is in. There's no waiting for payment. Your product goes out. Your customers are happy. It was an eye-opener and also a kick in the ass for me because I'd broken my back for the last 3 years with retail. And while, okay, there's a nice return on it, but the online was so much easier and such less heartache. And now, you know, as things go on during the year, then, you know, you're up against it because you have to limit the amount of staff that we're in because of COVID. So I was actually working longer hours than I ever had because my husband and I were trying to get in there when other people weren't in there to pull orders, etc. Okay. But you just get into a new routine. It was just a new way of doing things. And as of lately now, we're dealing with four European online companies who, you know, are selling similar type of product, but they love the Irishness of the product and it's working really well. So, you know, it's shown us that seriously, there's a whole new area to the business that, you know, that we really need to be exploring more. We had also started with Amazon, .co.uk, but obviously Brexit, that had worked really well, like for the first 6 months before COVID hit.
Wow.
So Brexit we've chosen to probably not do that, but we're going to do Amazon.de because we already know the product works in Germany.
Yeah.
The product will work in Germany. It'll work in other places, you know? And again, we do that through a third party. So it's very straightforward. You prepare your product, you drop it to a central point and they look after it from there. So there's a lot yet to be done. It's very exciting. Whilst COVID has been hard work, we've learned a serious amount from it.
It's fascinating how online has been propelled forward.
Oh,
maybe 5 to 10 years. Like it's phenomenal. Like stuff you wouldn't normally buy online. You're just like, yeah, of course. It is what Absolutely. It is, especially if you used it once before, especially something like your product where you're like, yeah, I just eat that every second day or every day and that's just what I do. Why wouldn't I buy 30 days worth of it?
Exactly. And that's the amazing thing, right? You know, we do analysis on it and it's gone from, you know, I'll buy a couple of packs to I'm buying a couple of kgs, you know, and they just portion it out and it's great for us, you know? So it's like, I know everyone's saying, oh, you need to be online, but you need to make sure people know you're online as well. Yeah. You know? So it's getting the whole story out there.
I keep saying that to people. I think Irish businesses are still lagging behind. Like, we're a year into this now and I think people are still not getting it. My God, I can't even check if the local cafe is open. Like, and you're like, lads, come on. I don't want to be able to order the coffee, but I still want to know if you're open or not. Like, I still think there's a huge gulf between you've people who are getting it very quickly, like yourselves. And then you've people who are like, no, it'll be grand. It'll come back. You know, I think we're living in a whole new world now.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll never go back to what it was. People have become so used to being able to order at the touch of a button.
Yes.
And it's funny, you know, they've become quite impatient as well. you know, before COVID hit, you'd order today, you'd have it tomorrow. COVID hits, the couriers are under pressure. You order today, you might get it in 2 days' time. Mm. But after 24 hours, we're getting emails going, why didn't I get it today? Yeah. You know, people suddenly became impatient. So it's a learning curve from both sides.
I think Deliveroo and Uber and Just Eat have kind of like, they've changed people's behaviors massively in terms of patience, especially Amazon as well. I used to love Amazon.co.uk. I'd be like, great, be here in 24 hours. And now it's like, well, I might get from Germany in a week.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's forever. Yeah. But like, my God, if someone said to you a couple of years ago, oh, you'll have it in a week, you'd be like, amazing. I want to leave my house. Class. But I think it's just perceptions change very quickly and habits change very quickly.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah.
So what... I always like to ask people who have deep industry knowledge, what trends are you seeing in the food, say, snacking space? So you're like, that's interesting.
Well, obviously, it's definitely getting more healthy, but more convenient. The easier it is for people, the better. Like even as far as pack sizes for us, right? So we sell in a 25 gram pack, which really is only maybe 6 or 7 little pieces. It's not enough for people anymore now. Yeah. They want more volume in their pack. Price issue will always be a problem here, I think, in this country. People want more for less almost.
Human nature.
Yeah, it's just, and it's a quality thing as well. But people, and what I was worried about was that people wouldn't eat as healthily when they were working from home. But actually, we've seen a very different story from our online. People seem to be definitely much more aware at home that they're eating healthily because they're not getting out, you know, they're not getting out for that 5 or 10 minute stroll down to the cafe or whatever. So we're seeing a really healthy growth in our product sales. But there's a huge emphasis on support local, which I think is just phenomenal, that will have got a lot of people through COVID from a small industry point of view.
Yeah, do you think we can sustain that? Because that's something I've been kind of trying to push as well on the pod, and also just from my own behaviors of just like shopping local and just thinking a little bit more about something before you buy it. You know, going, oh, where else can I get that? Even like, you know, buying like gym and coffee clothes from here in Ireland and stuff like that. How can Irish businesses, because we alluded to it there, we give the problem but not the solution. How can Irish businesses do what you've done and kind of start embracing online a bit more? Because you touched on, okay, you get online, but then you need to spread the message. So how... maybe share your story a little bit on that.
Well, first of all, I wonder when all of this settles down, will the support local still be as strong as it was? Or will people, because we're all human, will we default back to our natural habit of convenience, just convenient shopping? Convenience doesn't really matter. There's no loyalty to the brand. And I certainly think there'll be a certain percentage of people, because budget will be their thing. And that's, you know, that's the way they have to survive. But I do think that there'll be a lot of people who will remain supportive to brands that they have found, and knowing that, you know, this whole thing of sustainability is so important. You know, you're shopping local, you're supporting local, you're supporting local employment, you know, you're not traveling as much. You know, that whole area is growing slowly, But the younger generation are definitely becoming more aware of it. And we have quite a young following. Like, I have two sons who play rugby. A lot of their friends would eat the product. When my boys aren't seeing it out of my kitchen and selling it to their pals.
So entrepreneurs, gotta love it.
Ground in fairness. But like, I think a lot of that mindset will help. But I do think it's from the younger generation, and they're growing up with it. So we have a whole job to do with converting the old generation to that way of thinking.
Yeah, I think there's been a perfect storm of things that have happened in terms of Brexit's happened, COVID's happened, you know, shipping has kind of slowed down, you know, we're all, and it's, I think there's more of a face to people now in terms of there's more of a face to brands. And I think brands like yourself who do have a personality, who do have, well, this is Noreen. Noreen is Irish Biltong. I was only talking to someone about this yesterday. He's like, oh, how do you think brands are going to develop? I was like, they'll be personality led, because otherwise, well, I can buy Biltong in 10 different places. But if I have a face to that going, well, I know who started that. I remember seeing her video about how she built out the new factory. And I remember seeing her, you know, the power of story is huge. And I think COVID has given that to people, because you're like going, well, I now know two doors down, my neighbor produces his own honey. Or, you know, simple things like that. I do think it will sustain, but you're bang on about the younger generation. I was having a chat yesterday with someone about sustainability, and he was like, this is a non-negotiable. This will become just business. This will not become, oh, and we're an eco-friendly green business. No, that will just be assumed. And if you're not, it'll be like, those guys don't, you know, it's not compostable. It's not biodegradable. It's not this, that, and the other. You know, I think it's just going to become, and it's going to become, I think, very quicker. And as you say, it'll be driven by those young consumers who are coming up to 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, who have the buying power to dictate, well, I'm just not buying off you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're bang on the buck there, because as you said, like 2020, I think, will be known for the year of obviously massive change from all angles. And I think it will have fast-tracked a lot of this type of stuff, because people now realize the importance of shopping local, of supporting local. You're literally keeping businesses going. And I think, as I said before, obviously there'll be a percentage of people that won't resonate with, but I think the grand majority of people that are able to do it should continue to do that, because, you know, it's family businesses, it's heritage, it's passing businesses from one generation to another and growing them and pivoting them and getting that whole growth thing going. You know, it's amazing. You know, like when we go back, so I come from farming, John comes from farming, like the track of story of our lives is, you know, my family would laugh at me if I had said 20 years ago, I'd be dealing in beef. Simple as that, right? There was no way. I was always into, you know, like I went to art college, you know, fashion was my thing. You know, you wouldn't catch me dead on the farm at one stage in my life. Yes, here I am, married a farmer and selling beef, you know, and it's just kind of the full circle. It's amazing. But the other thing you mentioned a while ago is the story behind small businesses, the faces behind that business. It's so important that people do that, that they say, you know, my name is Noreen and my husband and I, we set up this new business and this is what it's about. And these are I often say that Biltong was my fifth child. I have four children. Those poor children have had Biltong hammered into the morning, noon and night for the last number of years. They're sick of it. My youngest is probably could sell Biltong to the Arabs at this stage, right? Because she's been brought up with it. But that's how passionate you get about building a brand and building a small business. And it's very important to relate those stories, like why we did it, where we come from. We live in the country, like it's our heritage, and we really do mean what we say. We're very passionate about the business, and I think that's what builds people's trust.
You have to be, because it's bloody hard to do it day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out, because that's what it takes. And if you're not passionate about it, it's not going to work, really. It
won't work. And people will see that very quickly. And you'll just fall very quickly, because it's damn hard work getting things across the line and getting people to take, you know, to open up to a new brand, a new idea, a new concept. But if you have the belief and the passion behind it, you'll make it work.
Yeah, you have to be consistent no matter what you're doing. That's why I love doing the podcast, because it makes me think about things, makes me go, no, this is what I believe. And you have to then embrace that every week. I can't be saying this week, oh yeah, no, I believe this week. Next week going, actually, no, I don't believe that anymore. You know, you have to follow through. You have to be consistent, and you have to just get on with it. Just get on with it. But I do think that is the future of brands. I think that is the future of successful brands, is having that story angle. Yeah. That's why I love doing the pod, because there's literally thousands of Irish businesses who aren't telling their story. People are like, oh, you run out of people after couple of weeks. I'm like, no, there's thousands of businesses. You just have to.
We have amazing, like, as I said, I'm involved in lots of networks, and there are some amazing small businesses, food producer, drink producers out there that have the most amazing products. And for one reason or another, are just not visible. And that might be down to resources, or it might be down to whatever. But, you know, like, there is some amazing products out there.
We do need to get better at telling our story, though. There's a bit of an Irish thing about, we're doing a bit. You know, it's like, no, come on, tell me. I can't fill in the gaps for you. Like,
yeah, it's a real Irish thing, isn't it? Yeah, we're getting on grand.
Like. Tipping along. Tell me, what is the kind of the plan, or what's the kind of 6 to 12 months you see ahead for kind of Biltong, and just in general, business in general? Like, what are you seeing?
Yeah. Oh, it's very straightforward for us. It's all export.
Okay.
Absolutely. Online export. As I said, we have four international online platforms we're working with at the minute. And indications are that it's definitely the way for us to go. So it's growing volume on that. And as I said, if we can make it work in one area, we can make it work in others. Look, when COVID comes, you know, when we get on top of the COVID scenario and places open back up again, you know, we will be supplying into places, and, you know, that whole Irish retail thing will come back. But I certainly won't be as concentrating on it as I was.
Yeah.
Because my energies need to be in different areas, and it's online, and export is definitely where we're going.
I have one final question for you. I think you might have just answered it there. What is your advice to kind of young entrepreneurs and young kind of food producers to kind of get that kind of ball rolling for themselves?
Well, I suppose, as I said before, you cannot do enough market research. You need to have, for me, having people on our board that know us, know our business, and know the business we're trying to get into was invaluable. We have two particular individuals who are on our board, and they have phenomenal experience in small business growth. They've been there, they've done that, they've been in the food industry. They see the pitfalls before we do. Okay. And they have a mound of information.
Right.
So you can never have enough of that. And self-belief, in fairness, is huge. But you need to make sure that whatever product you're putting out there is sellable, is fixing a problem for someone, and is scalable.
That's super advice. I think having that knowledge behind you as well is important. I think
it's invaluable. You know, because we all think we know everything, you know. You know everything about your product, but you don't know everything about how to get it out there. It's how you get, it's the route you take. And you could take 100 routes and you could get nowhere with it. So you need to be willing to listen to experience and to also pivot very quickly if you figure, oh, actually, I thought this was the way to go, it's not. And small businesses can do that. Big businesses, you know, can't do that easily. Where small businesses can pivot, you know, on a pin edge, you know. So it's important to keep your mind open that maybe your initial vision is not necessarily the end goal, is not necessarily the right way to go once you've discovered other things. You know, because my initial vision was, oh my God, we were going to do this, that, and the other. It's completely different. You know, it is completely different. And it all comes with experience of the whole journey of startup.
When people message in after a certain episode and they're like, oh, I love that person. I'd love to know how they started. You know, how should I start? I'm like, just start, because it'll not resemble anything you think, whatever it's on your page now, going, this is my idea, is that after 12 months, it'll look nothing like that. And there's only one way to get there, and that's doing the dirty, ugly MVP, first product, second product, third product. Okay, now actually that's wrong. This is right. There's only one way. I'll squeeze in one final question. You just said something very interesting there about having a board. How did you get people like that involved in your company?
Persuasion. No, to be honest, well, I suppose I did my pitch to them and I said, look, this is the product, taste it. This is where we think we're going to go. I had, as I said, I did the New Frontiers program with Carlo IT. It's, you know, it's an entrepreneurship program which exposes you to a load of different mentors.
Okay.
And prepares you for pitching and prepares you, shows you what type of people you want on your board. And these two individuals were already connected with us in that they knew our existing core business. They also knew what type of people we were, how we worked.
Okay.
I think that's important. Myself, my husband, we would be opposite ends of the scale. John is ultra safe. I'm like, oh, we can do this. It's no problem. And, you know, but it means we kind of balance each other out.
Yeah.
And it's so important that they got what we wanted to do and they liked what we wanted to do, but they also saw the potential in it, possibly quicker than we did, actually. But they had it from experience, whereas we were looking at every tiny little milestone along the way. They were able to say, well, actually, if you can get this far, then potentially this will open up to you. Mm. And it was just amazing. They bring you along. They give you an ability to have a bigger vision than you actually think you can allow yourself to have. And suddenly you're like, oh, this is good, you know. And then when things go wrong, they're like, hang on, you can just tweak this, or, you know, so they're there as a kind of a platform to ground you, but also to allow you to try stuff that you wouldn't, you know, encouragement. Whoever is sitting around your table is very important.
I think that's great advice as well, especially in Ireland, to have someone who's going to go, well, you could do this 10 times bigger, 20 times bigger. Because, you know, we're a small country, you kind of tend to think a little bit smaller, but you do need people who are like, lads, you don't need to sell in Carlow. You need to sell to Ireland, and they need to sell to the UK, exactly. And you need to sell to Europe, then you need to sell to America. Yeah. So it's great having those kind of people. Noreen, where can people learn a little bit more about yourself and the company?
Okay, so we have a website. It's www.irishbuilton.ie. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn and Noreen Doyle. We're on Facebook. Look, we're on every platform except TikTok. I've not got my handle on that yet.
That's a tough one. I haven't figured that out either. I posted two videos last week. A guy did them for me. He's like, oh, there you go. You're on TikTok. And I was like, oh, okay. I'll figure it out though. That's brilliant. Listen, Noreen, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate that.
Not at all, Gary. It's great to talk to you. Thanks a million.
And thank you for staying to the end if you made it this far. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Noreen Doyle. As I said, you can join my newsletter, which goes out every single Monday. Go to MrGaryFox.com, and you can also catch us on YouTube, Mr. Gary Fox. I will see you back on Monday for the Idea Lab. Until then, have a super weekend.